If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball. This week, I'm joined again by recurring guest at a perfect time. It's KMOX's Kevin Wheeler. We're set to talk about the winter meetings, preview the Cardinals going shopping for young talent to fit their future window of contention. We also might sprinkle in some Hall of Fame conversation as a pretty big vote is going to happen this weekend in Orlando on the eve of Major League Baseball's annual gathering around the hot stove. That's right. Winter meetings are coming.
You got to get the Sean Bean accent going.
I should have nailed
winter
that.
Winter is coming. That was a little more Liam Neeson.
You want to try again?
No. I don't do good Sean Bean.
Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined, well, you already know, you listened to the intro, you heard his laugh, all of it fits in there. It's Kevin Wheeler of KMOX. I believe he has featured 22 out of the 24 hours now on KMOX. Do I have that right?
There are days where that may happen, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
I mean, you're on DGS, you're on Gas House Gang, you're on Red Bird. I mean, you're Kevin. Winter meetings start up next week. There's the Hall of Fame vote on Sunday with really compelling conversations that we don't have 4 hours to get into with what goes on to with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. But let's just get to the what it means for the Cardinals. They are going to be a popular team because of all the trade talk. They have players who other teams are interested in, headlined by Brendan Donovan. Probably Jojo Romero is second on that list, but they've also entertained interest from teams on Wilson Contreras, whether or not they can find a fit for him. You know, he has a no trade clause. They've got calls on Alec Burleson, also Lars Nootbaar. If you're a left-handed batter, the Cardinals have gotten a call on you, and then also their catching depth. So they've been a popular place for teams to reach out to see what direction they're going to go in. What to you? Give me your to-do list for the Cardinals at the winter meetings. What are some priorities that you set for the
Cardinals? Even if it doesn't happen there, you've got to find a home for Arenado. I mean, I think that that's a – unless you're really going to move out a bunch of other players, it's just really hard to proceed like you did last year. Now, is there a scenario where that could work? Sure. I mean, like example, if you were going to trade Gorman because somebody made you an offer that you liked, and now you're not as worried about clearing up third base as you were before. Like there are scenarios where it's not the end of the world, but that would be, I know it's been reported as Bloom's number one, you know, goal or whatever. I think that's probably is finding a home for Arenado, but I don't know that that can happen fast, Derek. Do you?
I
feel like that's going to be after some of the free agents fall into place.
I have to be careful because I'm not reporting that. I mean, I brought it up the other day that, like, to me, their number one goal is accumulating talent.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
That is what their actions have said. Because
it's a good differentiation.
Right. And they're willing to make moves to accumulate talent. Now, they want to find a fit for Nolan Arenado. But Chaim Bloom has also said they're not going to release him. And if he's here at the end of the offseason, they will welcome him back as their starting third baseman. So to me, I don't know how that fits as a top priority if you're allowing for the fact that the alternative outcome is still okay, though not ideal. What is not okay is going this offseason without accumulating talent. Is standing back with the team you have that is not going to contend or you don't want it to contend or isn't likely to contend or whatever you want to say about 2026. This is a team that is building towards the future. So a priority of this winter is acquiring talent for that future at the expense of talent they have now. Full stop.
I would argue that that is correct. And I'm gonna.
You
ask
don't have
you,
to argue. You can just say that is correct.
It was a joke. But in practicality, is it? And this is a legit question. Not trying to put you in a corner. Is giving more opportunity to some of the talent you already have part of acquiring more talent?
Yeah. No,
are those related? Because again, last year it didn't work out.
No, I think that's fair.
They learned nothing about Thomas Tejesi. You get Gorman's was in and out of the lineup all season long, and you know, inconsistent. Maybe related to that, maybe not. But he was inconsistently in there. I'm not saying that you can't keep Arenado. I want to be clear on that.
Yeah,
I'm saying that your other moves have to make all of that work better than it did last year.
I think that's fair. Do you want my unpopular opinion?
Sure.
They learned plenty.
I don't know.
I mean, you know what they hadn't. You know what they haven't learned. They haven't learned if JJ Weatherholt can succeed up here. And
well, now you're adding him into the mix too, right?
Right. You shouldn't block him.
That even more.
No. I don't think it complicates it any at all. I think they learned plenty. You know, they had opportunity galore for guys. They have had, you know, 3 years of opportunity galore. You know, multiple players had long runs of playing time, and you cannot, you just can't have it both ways. You can't constantly say, we didn't give this guy enough time. Oh no, he has to adjust to then succeed up here. It's at some point in time, you know, it's run its course. It's either not going to happen here, or it's not going to happen, or you're forcing it to happen and then you'll struggle. I think, you know, I understand that they left the season without, the perception is that they left the season without answers that they wanted on some of these guys. I would position it this way. They left the season without the answers they wanted on these guys. And so now you can kick the can down the road, or you can just recognize that, like, oh man, the answers they gave us weren't the ones we were hoping for.
I think that's true in some cases, but I mean, there are others where I'm not sure that those guys absolutely got what you needed to get them for. I mean, you know, I use Gorman as the example. He spent the first 2 months barely playing.
Okay.
So you're taking a young player and you're coming out of spring and you're ready to go. And then you're sitting and you're largely sitting behind a guy at third base who was not performing well, for a lot of the season.
Yeah.
And you're not getting any reps at the position that the team is thinking about putting you long term.
Yeah. No, I
mean, you know, so at the time of year, at the end, when Arenado got hurt, I mean, Gorman had played like 12 games in 2 years at third base at that point.
No, I think it's a fair question. But if it didn't happen in the year you set it aside to happen, then maybe you just go, okay, look, now we have another year. We have a really talented young player coming up. The equation has shifted a little bit. It wasn't like they got a net zero information on these guys. They got some. Each of them had a long stretch. We can debate how long to perform. You know, there was a time when Brendan Donovan wasn't around for a while. He was on the injured list for a while. There was a whole 6 weeks where Nolan Arenado was not with the team because he was on the injured list. That's not a small amount of time when you add to the fact that it wasn't the only amount of time that some of the players got. I think, you know, at some point in time, there has to be some recognition that, yes, they didn't get the answers they wanted, but that wasn't because of the lack of opportunity. That just becomes a fig leaf for what they don't want to face, which is it just didn't work. They didn't get the best from the guys that they hoped.
And I would agree with that last part, but at a lot of the year, you chose to play an underperforming, declining veteran simply because he's a veteran. And because of who he is, not because of where he fits into your future.
Yeah. I mean, or did they think he was better than what they had?
I mean, how? He wasn't. I mean, he's better defensively, but at some point you got to hit the ball too. I don't mean him. I mean, as a team, like, you know,
if the answer is yes, Kevin, isn't that pretty revealing?
But it's still a what if, because they chose actively over and over and over again. Ollie even said it, like, if Nolan's healthy, he's playing. Well, why? Maybe he would be better playing 4 days a week instead of six.
Oh, they had that conversation. Yeah. They definitely had that conversation.
Yeah, but they didn't do it. Training.
Well, that's fair.
When it came down to it, the star player dictated what he was going to do. And I get it. He's a Hall of Famer, dude. He's one of the two or three greatest third basemen I've ever seen, and probably of all time. So, but I mean, at some point, we have to not defer, and we have to defer to the plan to find out about the future.
So do you worry, just to get us back onto the to-do list, do you worry that like this conversation, that if they do focus on Arenado, they will miss the opportunities elsewhere? Or, I mean, are there other things they have to do at the winter meetings?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they don't have that. To me, there's no reason why one should block the action on the other, right? I mean, you know, I think Bloom's a smart guy. I think they'll be able to focus on trying to find a good home for Arenado while also trying to sort out the other stuff. And I think it's more about, Derek, just making it all make more sense and making it fit better. Mm. You know, we've talked about this before. Just too many guys who play the same positions, who hit from the left side of the plate. And I don't know that there's any one that has to go. Like, none of them are guys to me that you say, I just want to run this guy off. I don't want to run off Brendan Donovan. He's a good player. I don't want to run off Burleson. He's a good player with team control. I don't want to run off Newt because I think Newt still has untapped potential. But at the same time, I also don't want to sell low. But if a team's going to give me a reasonable price, that's an easier one to do. But I think, like, when you said it about how do we accumulate talent for the long term, the guys that I would say are the most logical to the move are the ones that are closest to leaving on their own anyway.
Okay. So so accumulating talent would be trading Jojo Romero.
Yes.
Okay. Accumulating talent would be trading Brendan Donovan this winter.
Yes. And again, assuming the offers are what they should be.
Right. What about Lars Nootbaar coming back from injury? I've heard from varying teams whether or not they actually think that Lars is in play for them. When you know, what the Cardinals say is fine. But I've had a chance to talk with folks with other teams, and their view is that they're not exactly sold that the Cardinals are actively looking to trade or even really going to trade Lars, in part because what's the low point value, right?
Like, right now, the injury.
Now, factoring in the fact that, like, maybe he's a trade deadline move, that then you have a year of performance. But if you start thinking that there's going to be a lockout, then you go, well, that's only a few months of performance. So that becomes a factor too. But anyway, so give me a sense of, like, okay, you have four left-handed batters and one left-handed pitcher. Who do you trade and who do you keep? Kind of rank them from that spectrum of most likely the guy you got to move, or at least get close to moving in the winter meetings, to the guy that if you end the offseason keeping, you're fine.
Yeah, I think all of the guys that we're talking about I'm fine if they're there, but they can't all be there.
Gotcha. Okay.
See what I'm saying? Because if they're all there, well, then you're just repeating 2025.
So true.
And then you're going to have a hard time. Then you're going to have the hard time of, well, where does JJ fit? I don't think that should be a question. I think the minute JJ's ready, the JJ gets a spot, period. Boom. Here you go, buddy. Here's a locker. Here's a position. Go hit second in our lineup or whatever.
Every indication from them is that they want to be able to have JJ Weatherholt in their opening day lineup.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where you're going to have your best chance at a rookie of the year and getting a bonus pick and all that kind of stuff. And to me, to make that simple, one of those players at least would probably have to be on the move. But I mean, like, to me, if I'm ranking them number one, to me, the reason I would put Brendan Donovan number one is I think it's the best combination of all factors. He's 2 years from free agency. You have people that play the positions that he plays, and you've got a young kid who plays his primary position, second base, who very likely is going to be your next impact player. So you already have a ready replacement. You don't need to spend to fill that spot. Mm-hmm. You don't need another left-handed bat because JJ is a left-handed bat. He can step into that role. Donovan's 2 years from free agency. And he's a great fit for almost every contender. I mean, really kind of like it's the timing of it, because it's not the player, though. I love the player. And if this team was where we were, Derek, 5 years ago, I'd probably be arguing for an extension.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, if you're
months ago, they were closed.
Right. But I mean, like, if you're a franchise that they've been really in from like 2006 until about 2018, 2019, that's a guy that I'm like, I want to keep that guy.
Yeah.
He's worth that money for us. That is, when we're an annual contender, he's worth that. But when you are where they are now, I just don't think that's justified.
So, okay. So, all right, we have to-do list. Find a team, find a move that fits for Nolan Arenado. number two, maximize what really is their priority, the trade inventory they have. But maximize that to get talent that better fits a future plan. What else? Is there anything else on the to-do list?
I mean,
you want to make some progress with your manager on an extension? What do you need from the outside? Do the Cardinals need anything on the outside?
I mean, you need a starting pitcher.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a great one. You and I have talked about it before. That's like, I love the idea of a Dustin May. I don't know if he wants it. I don't know if the team wants it. I don't know what the money looks like, but just the idea of it.
Yeah.
I would love the guy to cover some innings to be someone with some upside as well, not just a 35-year-old who's going to cover innings and then move on, or maybe
they already got that traded. Guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy in Richard Fitz.
I agree, but I want another one. Because okay. I had to move a guy to get that guy. So he's just slotting into Sonny Gray.
Just being
I like Fitz a lot, by the way. I thought that was a really interesting get.
I mean, that's that guy, the way you describe him, you know, young guy, can shoulder the innings, has upside.
Well, I'm talking about in free agency to add to what they did, because he's basically, let's just practically say, not writing in pen, but just say from a pencil standpoint in the offseason, you're slotting him in Sonny's spot, right? That was a spot taken by Sonny, maybe not that order, but that's a spot. And I still want to see another spot.
Fair.
With somebody that can cover stuff, because I don't want to say I have to put Andre Pallante in there. I want to put him in there if he deserves to be in there.
Okay.
I don't want to put him in there if just because I don't have any other choice and Quinn Matthews isn't ready or whatever. And I want to have an option too in case the whole Leahy thing doesn't work. Like, I think it should, but I don't want to be stuck if it doesn't.
Fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if it's a guy that could be like a Dustin May, even a guy like, depending on what happens with their markets, even a guy like a Walker Buehler, who's a little older, that guy could, if he gets healthy and finds some of his stuff again, could be a trade piece, could be an interesting thing for later in the year, because he's a guy that's got a proven postseason track record. I just don't want it to be a guy that's just there to get a 4.70 ERA and throw 150 innings. And not about the competitive side. I just don't see the long-term benefit. Like you said, that priority being, how do I build more talent long-term? It would maybe be signing a free agent pitcher that could that has more likely chance of being that or doing that for me at the deadline.
Absolutely. No, that's everything is through the lens of that. It's a weird spot to be in, but totally. Like I worked on a story for the Post-Dispatch a few weeks ago that was like, here are some of the starters that fit what the Cardinals need. And one of those things was short-term deal that they can flip, like the Eric Fetties of the world, who you could move at the deadline. You sign them for 2 years, but you understand or 1 year or whatever, but you understand 2 years may be better, but you understand that, we're giving you the team are giving you is the opportunity to start and build your value for your next contract. What you are giving us is performance.
Yes.
But the chance to then flip you for a future talent.
Yeah.
Mutually agreeable. We see these deals happen. They don't really often happen at the front end of the winter meetings or the front end.
That's right. A little later,
because everybody wants to try to get, a little bit more certainty, or they want to go to a win. But eventually the music stops. There are only so many chairs left. And one of the things that the Cardinals can offer is starts. They can say, we're going to put you in the rotation. Yeah. However it goes, we'll let you work through it. I talked to a veteran pitcher last year who was telling me about, if you are a veteran, and I thought this was a really interesting way to put it. If you're a veteran and you know that you aren't performing at your best and that you need to work through it, one thing you want to avoid is going to a team where they're going to be impatient with your results because the pressure is on to perform, or they just have so much money that they can just move on from you.
Right.
And so the example was you go to the Bronx, right? And you have a couple clunker outings, but you're like, I need another start to get going. Well, the Yankees may not go, all right, we'll give you that. They'll go DFA, you're out. And then you're stuck. Whereas a team that's struggling or building toward the future or whatever like that has a different kind of vantage point, or there's less pressure on or whatever like that, can go, we'll give you a few more starts to work through it. Kind of like what the Cardinals did with Fetty. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I think that would be, That would be great. Honestly, I wouldn't mind something similar in the bullpen too. And I know that's something that was mentioned. I know you've talked about that, right?
Well, yeah, and Haim has brought that up. He said
Maton type, right?
Yeah. And there are a few out there.
Will be at the end of free agency too. I mean, just like Maton was last year.
I mean, there's a guy out there who's, you know, Kittredge, Maton. It's very similar. You know,
there's somebody that might be able to take on the role that assuming Leahy moves to the rotation, somebody can take on a little bit of what he was doing for you in the pen.
Yeah. And if Jojo Romero moves on, then you start looking at like, okay,
you got to get a lefty.
or you have to say, well, maybe one of these young lefties is that role. So
I really do believe long term that a guy like Cooper Jerpy is a better reliever than a starter.
Maybe.
Just given the health things, and he's kind of funky, and boy, funky lefties in the pen are pretty fun.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's an interesting thing to look at where, you know, Mott's, you know, is that where Quinn Matthews makes his initial contributions?
Could that be a Liberatore type thing?
It could be a Liberatore type thing. Absolutely. For both Bryce and Mott's and, and for, you know, there's also the reunion you could have with Steven Mott's, who, you know, would give you some, I mean, it would be interesting. Certainly there's a fit there still for Steven Matz.
Especially in the pen. Yeah.
Especially in the pen and as a supplement, just in the same role he had. Yeah. And then you trade him again. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's fascinating, but you could do that. I mean, it worked out really well for him here. And then you just trade him again and get more. So it's a really interesting spot. So anything else? Like where do you stand on the extension for the manager?
You know, I don't know. I'd be okay with it. It's certainly the only thing I don't know about it, because I don't think anything that's gone, I shouldn't say anything. I don't think the biggest problems with the team had anything to do with who the manager is. Right. I mean, I like a lot of what Ollie does. I have other things where I'm like, like, I think sometimes we're a little too deferential to veterans when it doesn't make sense. But I think a lot of managers are. I think Mike Matheny was that too. I think Mike Schilt was that. There was a little too much of, you know, these guys are trying. All right, but they're supposed to try, right? Like that's you don't get complimented for trying at the big league level. You're supposed to. But I'd be okay with it. I don't know that it's a must, though. I don't know that you have to do it. But I'll tell you that what's the alternative, right? Is it really that tough to play out the 1 year when you know you're not supposed to win anyway? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that there's going to be anybody. Like, it's different if you're expected to go win 94 games and then it's not happening and now the seat gets warm. I don't know that this seat needs to get warm at all this year because we all know where they are.
That's an interesting thing. Well, I mean, remember, an extension isn't about the years. It's about the dollars.
True. So, and I don't mind the money. If they're going to give him a raise, I think he's doing just fine. I don't have an issue with that. If they wanted to give him a 2 or 3 year deal, no bother to me. I think that
all that does is guarantee the dollars. It doesn't guarantee the
years. No, that's right. That's right. You can always be let go. It's not, as we talked about earlier, it's not the amount of money that a team won't walk away from.
Right. And it's a matter of like, all right, if you give them an extension, that doesn't, like, it doesn't change the temperature on the seat. In some ways,
no, it's like when it's time, like, to win, the temperature is going to go up.
Right. And you're piloting us through this water and we think you're great at developing or we like your temperament or anything like that. If anything,
you know what? Now that you said the way you said that, I'd give him 2 years.
All right.
I'd do it now because I think you're right. I like the idea that you want to have somebody that is comfortable being in that seat under the current circumstances.
There you go.
And again, I think someone who generally does a good job. And I think there's no such thing as a manager that doesn't have things that people criticize. People criticized Tony La Russa when he was here.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, he's one of the greats to ever do it. And that happened. So that's natural. But I think overall the results, the record is all about the amount of talent in this case, not a lack of aptitude in the manager's chair.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting, I mean, it doesn't have to happen at the winter meetings, but at least, you know, they had additional conversations and you could see it going.
Could that be our spring training press conference this year? seems like almost not every, but a lot of spring trainings, there's always one. And it's like, oh, we got an extension. Well, we got a this, they got that.
They stopped doing that a few years ago, which is kind of where they got into this spot.
It's like, good point. They didn't have anybody to extend anymore.
I mean, when you're talking about the spring training extensions being the front office 1 year and the manager the next, and none of these players who took them to arbitration or none of the young core that they want to bring around, you know, that's kind of where they got into this spot. Yep. And I want to say, you know, it's not because they weren't willing to sign. It was, you know, part of it was performance too.
Yeah,
When you have a bunch of similar players all in a line at different age groups, it becomes a little bit easier to not sign Tommy Edman to an extension into his free agency when you go, yeah, man, we got Brendan Donovan. Becomes a lot easier to not sign Brendan Donovan to an extension when you go, we got Thomas DeJacy. You know, I mean, you start having these guys who are very similar. Not saying that they are the same, but they have some similarities.
Yes.
It's becomes, and no one is outproducing the profile, you know, then it makes it very easy for them not to sign. Kevin, you have any thoughts on the other big thing that's likely to happen at the winter meeting? Well, it's definitely going to happen at the winter meeting.
Right, right.
We don't know the result of it, and that is the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's such an interesting group because I think you could make a good case for almost any one of those players.
There are eight names on it. We can run through them real quick. There are the Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Dale Murphy, Fernando Valenzuela. I feel like I'm taking a quiz. Don Mattingly.
Yep.
Carlos Delgado.
Yep.
Gary Sheffield.
Fernando.
And Jeff Kent. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head.
Good job, Derek. It's almost like you do this for a living. You're pretty good. I could make a good argument for any of them. I mean, I can make some arguments against a few of them too. I would say the weakest candidate there is probably Fernando. It was a phenomenon for a very short period of time, and then it was just okay for a long time. Mm-hmm. I love Mattingly. His talent was certainly Hall of Fame worthy, but I just don't know that he did it long enough. And it's not his fault, but how many players in history have had careers cut short? But talent-wise, performance-wise, when he was at his peak, he certainly was that level of player. So if he gets in, I wouldn't be arguing against it. It's not like Harold Baines, who I thought was, that's not a Hall of Fame player. If Mattingly's in, I get it. But I would argue the length of the career is the problem. Dale Murphy's worthy. Gary Sheffield's worthy. Jeff Kent's worthy. Carlos Delgado is so underrated and because he was never caught up in PEDs or anything, and he put up just numbers. He's a lot of Fred McGriff to me. Very comparable. Interesting that both spent so much time in Toronto. But the story is about Clemens and Bonds, right? And I guess by extension, Sheffield, too. What does this group of people that includes Ozzie Smith and Tony Perez and Alan Trammell and Robin Yount, what do those Hall of Famers and Fergie Jenkins and Jim Cott and Juan Marichal, what do those guys think about that group? And do they have any leanings? I think that's the group you have to win to get those kind of players in, right?
Yeah.
I feel like other people are going to be a little bit less opposed directly. I don't know that I've heard very many former players say anything positive about anybody caught up in the PEDs.
No, I think there's a real chance for this committee, which also includes baseball writers, Jason Stark.
Yeah. Tyler Kepner's great. Yeah.
Two of my close friends, you know, who will be in that room, the room where it happens. I think that there's a real, real chance for some nuance to emerge from this. We'll see what the support is. I often think that the Hall of Fame is a comparison game, whether you compare the people on the ballot to the people already in the hall or you compare them to the players who are on the ballot with them, which happens a lot. How that all breaks down. You have a real chance for some understanding of like, all right, who emerges as some of the leaders. We won't know all the votes, but we'll know some who got close and we'll certainly know who got in. If Gary Sheffield gets in and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens do not, then we can see a real clear, line that this group, which includes their peers, was willing to draw. If Don Mattingly gets in, you can see, or Dale Murphy gets in,
yeah,
you can see how emotion and sentimentality helps raise a talent with their peers ahead of the guys who have astounding numbers, but also have the ties to performance enhancing drugs. You know, if you see, you know, a few of these guys, maybe Fernando Valenzuela is the one, if you see him get support, then you could see how an advocate in the room with a charismatic argument could create a situation like they had with Harold Baines that gets him.
Yeah.
I think this ballot is so fascinating because I could see a route for every single player. I could see a route where Jeff Kent is the only one elected. You know, I mean, it's just, I think that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I think it's a really fascinating break, you know, place for the Hall that's been many, many years in creation that we're going to walk out of this vote. You know, we might have more questions than answers, but we're going to get a real clear sense of what that Hall is going to look like and what these errors committees are going to be dealing with over the next 10 years, which I'm eager to see. You know, there's no real right answer. You know, they're all great players. Are they among the greatest players? That's a harder question.
I think some of them are. I mean, clearly Bonds and Clemens are, but you got the PED stuff has to be weighed.
Correct.
You know, like Fernando was 4% above league average for his major league career.
Yeah.
You know, does being a phenomenon for a short period of time balance that out? Because Curt Schilling is almost 30% better than the league and he hasn't gotten in.
Right.
So he's a significantly better player than Fernando. And what I worry about is the emotion here, where the players that are peers of Fernando and Don Mattingly and Dale Murphy, because that's who's on that committee, guys who played with those guys. As far as the players are concerned, right, the players on the committee, I worry that it's going to become that emotional, I like this guy, or he's from my era, and that gives me more feels.
No, I think so. I mean, if I can, like, carefully kind of splice those two things, I understand where you're coming from. Like, well, I like this peer, and that's what I'm talking about, like the charismatic argument
right,
in the room. But I do think that if you want to use elements of the tools that the Hall gives voters, allows for, you know, considering sportsmanship, right? That's different than, like, say, the NFL, right? The NBA, but the NFL specifically says only on field production.
Right.
Cooperstown has a different valuation. And we have for a whole generation here, really focused on how to use the tool of sportsmanship to carve out from the ballot. There is nothing to say it can't be used to put on to the ballot. That is also permitted. You could also go, man, this guy was a phenomenon and he impacted the game in ways beyond what his ERA plus says he did, what his wins did. And that is a Hall of Fame level contribution to the game. You can make that case if you wish to, because the same tools that you go, I'm gonna question this guy's sportsmanship, you can also use to say, I'm going to highlight and underscore and reward this player's contribution. You know, you got lifetime. I mean, you know, Joe Torre's body of work was taken into account when he was elected as a manager, but his body of work was taken into account. With Don Mattingly, you could do the same thing. This is a lifetime spent in baseball. Is he just the guy who wore pinstripes and played first base and was the best of his era for a good part of the 80s? No, he's beyond that. You can consider beyond that,
I guess. I have a hard time with it because it's so subjective.
Absolutely. And it is. It is. Yeah. And otherwise, if it wasn't, they would just do what they do with the CBA. Come up with a war formula. Into Cooperstown you go.
Yeah, you know? I don't like that either. I agree there has to be some more, because I think it's a lot more about relative to your era than it is just like total numbers or whatever.
Well, then it's W runs created plus. We take into park factors, and
as an example, I won't go long on this, but Kirby Puckett had no business being in the Hall of Fame as a first ballot guy, and he's a very borderline Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. and he got in because people liked him. because he won that. And then we find out he's got spousal abuse issues at home. And I don't, I'm sorry, but I just, that's why that part of it bothers me, because there's always stuff we don't know. And if somebody gets an edge because of that, and then later on we find out, holy crap, maybe he wasn't the good guy that we thought he was.
Yeah.
Then you've now submarined the point of putting the guy in.
No, you, I understand where you're coming from. Any vote is going to arrive with incomplete information. It's just, this is the nature of voting. So you do your best to research as much as you can. But I, you know, I understand what you're saying is that, like, just the swell of emotion, the tide of emotion is a better way to describe that. And how that can lift a Hall of Fame candidacy. And you just can't, you either have to walk into the room and acknowledge that, be, and be aware of it, because I don't think you can ignore it and say it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, a recent tragedy is going to inform a vote in a way, just because we're human.
Yeah.
A charismatic appeal is going to inform a vote. All these things are part of it. So better to be aware of it than to be naive to think it won't.
Yep, exactly.
That is Kevin Wheeler. You can listen to him constantly at KMOX, but mostly on the, on the Drive Time show at afternoons at KMOX there, which is no longer 11. Well, it's also 11:20 a.m., but it's also on FM now, right?
104.1, baby.
104.1, and coming up on a huge anniversary, right? Huge birthday.
Yeah, we just had our birthday party, but yeah, Christmas Eve is the 100th anniversary of the existence of
Kevin
KMOX.
Wheeler being cool. Oh, no, just a KMOX.
I've only got about like 12% of that under my belt.
There you go. You can find him there at KMOX. Also does the Gas House Gang, does a whole lot of Cardinals coverage, and that continues through the offseason. There'll be a lot about the winter meetings for them to discuss. The Post-Dispatch will have two writers at the winter meetings to cover it constantly, to wallpaper stltoday.com with coverage. There'll be a chat, there'll be podcasts, there'll be videos. Benjamin Hockman will be on TikTok from the winter meetings. There'll be a lot of coverage there, so look for it all at stltoday.com. That's also where you can find the best podcast in baseball. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, and it has been for a baker's dozen of years. The best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. And that's it. I'm done.
Look at you. All right. You nailed it.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Huge news, Wayfair shoppers! There's still time to shop Wayfair's Cyber Week sale. Thought the savings were over? Think again. Cyber Week, aka the holiday home stretch, is on now. Right now, get up to 70% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home, just in time for the holidays. Yep, even the big stuff. Didn't get everything on your Black Friday list? We got you. There's no place like home for the holidays, and no place like Wayfair for Cyber Week savings. Shop Wayfair's Cyber Week right now through December 7th and save up to 70% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.